This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks.
A little after 9 o'clock this morning, there were a bunch of sirens downtown, turned on the police scanner. Police and fire and paramedics were called to 5th and Walnut, the 5th Third Center, home of the 5th Third Bank, for a report of an active shooter with multiple victims.
That was WVXU reporter Bill Reinhardt, one of the first on the scene, September 6th, 2018. Friday marks the one-year anniversary of the deadly shooting at 5th Third Bank at Fountain Square. Three people were killed in that attack that shocked the local community.
Cops started just running toward the building and called a couple of the people that I work with in the tower, and they said they had the building on lockdown and that there was somebody opening fire down in the lobby.
And that was witness Sam McDonald walking to work when the shooting started. One woman who survived even after being shot 12 times has launched a new organization to advocate for responsible gun ownership. And today we talk about how she's doing and what the organization's goals are. And we look at the post-traumatic stress disorder faced by many survivors of America's mass shootings. And we'll talk a little bit about the foundation set up in the aftermath of the shooting. Joining Cincinnati Edition today, our 5th Third shooting survivor, Whitney Austin. She's on the phone with us. Whitney, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We also have with us Cincinnati VA Medical Center Director of the Trauma and Recovery Center and University of Cincinnati Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience, Dr. Kathleen Chard. Welcome, Kathleen.
Thank you.
And we have UC Health Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing and Communications Officer, Kristen Weaver. She's also the chair of the Cincinnati Strong Victims Fund. Kristen, thanks for being here.
You bet.
And you can join our conversation, 513-419-7100. Share your recollections about what happened a year ago or ask questions of our guests, 513-419-7100. Email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll look for your comments and your tweets and try to get some of those into the show as well. Whitney, we so appreciate you being willing to share your story with us, and we do want to discuss the work that you're doing now as it relates to gun policy, and I understand you have an event tomorrow night on the one-year anniversary of the shooting, but before we get to that, will you just take us back to a year ago, and how did the day start for you? What were you setting out to do that day?
Sure. It started out as any other normal day. I spent a lot of time commuting from Louisville to Cincinnati, as I have been a corporate employee of 5th Third for more than 10 years. So normal day, just driving up 71 to check in at the corporate headquarters. From the get-go, it was a little different. I always remember this. My kids asked me for a second kiss, and they don't always do that. That's pretty rare, and for whatever reason, they asked that morning, and I was rushed, and I wanted to get out the door, but I did pause, and I gave them both a second kiss, which was, of course, special, and I hopped in the car, and I started driving up to Cincinnati, and what I typically did was take calls in the car, try and make that drive as productive as possible, and per usual, I was on a conference call as I was driving into the city. I did lose connectivity for a little bit as I parked in the Fountain Square parking garage, and then dialed back in, came up the stairs, walked across Fifth Street, and then walked right into the mass shooting.
So what do you remember about the start of the shooting? Did you walk into it underway, or do you recall those first shots?
So I did not walk in knowing that there was a shooting. I did have signs. For example, the glass in one of the revolving doors was completely shattered, but fully intact. I go back to, I was on a conference call. I was very focused on the conference call. I did think that's a little weird, but I thought, well, maybe somebody threw a rock at the door, but not enough to pause and think I shouldn't go in. So I saw all of the shattered glass, still fully intact. I pushed on the door, and then as soon as I pushed on the door is when the first barrage of bullets hit me, primarily on my right arm, but then, of course, across my chest into my left arm. And it was so forceful that I immediately collapsed within that quadrant of the revolving door, facing outward onto Fountain Square. And that's where I began to think, how do I get out of this situation? And there wasn't anybody on Fountain Square to save me. I couldn't stand up. I wasn't strong enough to do that. And then when I went to move my left arm to try and make a call, not even remembering any longer that I was on a conference call, which I couldn't do. My left arm didn't work well enough to do that. That's when I was hit by the second barrage of bullets. So I did not knowingly walk into a mass shooting, but I was immediately struck and then immediately moved into trying to problem solve and get out.
And you were ultimately hit 12 times. And as you mentioned, you were on the phone when you were walking in, noticed that there was some broken glass and continued on your way. But when you were first hit with what you called the first barrage of bullets, did you realize that that's what happened? Did you realize you had been shot?
Yes, there wasn't any other explanation. And I'll take it a step further. I knew that it was a mass shooting. I mean, that's how plugged in I am at this point. And I think much of America is plugged in that that's what this is. There is no other explanation for what this is other than a mass shooting. So I spent very little time assessing and all of my time trying to get out of the situation. But with no one on Fountain Square, no ability to call or move, that's when I started to believe that this is it. I'm going to die. I was coughing up blood, and it was very scary. Depths of despair is how I describe it. This is it. This is how your life is going to end. And then out of nowhere, like a miracle, Al Staples, the Cincinnati Police Department, arrived, and the rest is really history.
You mentioned that there was a first barrage, which suggests there was a separate one as well. And I have seen some interviews that you've given, and you mentioned just moments ago that you were trying to make a call. Who were you trying to call?
Oh, I thought I'll call 911. You know, back to the, what are my options here? The last one was to call someone, so I was going to call 911. I did have a moment where I thought, I'll call my family because I think I'm dying and I want to say goodbye. But I went through, I'll probably not be able to get a hold of my husband. And at this point, the kids are in school, so I'm not going to be able to get to them.
And while you were moving, is when you believe that the gunman noticed that you were still alive and he turned his attention to you again?
Yes, that's what I concluded in that moment. I've since, now I don't, have not watched many of the videos. I don't think that it's helpful for my mental strength to do that. I've since concluded that I don't think that's what happened. I think that much of the bullets that entered me were meant for someone else, but I just happened to be right next to that person.
Did you stay conscious the whole time? Did you lose consciousness at any point?
I did stay conscious, and that goes back to the wanting to survive and getting back to my family. As soon as I saw Al, my mindset completely shifted. It was no longer, this is it, make your peace with God. It's, you're going to live. And that's what I concentrated on communicating to him was, I'm a mother. I have a 5 and a 7-year-old. You need to get me home. I need to be a mother. And so it was impossible to lose consciousness. I needed to stay awake. I needed to focus. I needed to get out of that situation. I did not, I don't know that it's accurate to say I lost consciousness at any point. I can say when I got to the hospital and after many of the scans began and I started to, I think, feel more comfortable based upon medication, that's when I basically took a well-needed nap, I think. But at that moment, I felt comfortable enough with my situation to relax. Up until then, forget it. I had a goal. I had to live.
Can you talk about how life is different for you now, knowing that not only did you survive an awful tragedy, but that you experienced something, being shot 12 times, that likely would have killed anybody else?
I know. It doesn't make any sense. And people are always really interested in my thoughts on that. And my answer is it doesn't make any sense, but what do you do when you've been given a gift that doesn't make any sense? You pay it forward, and that is why I've started Whitney Strong. And as far as how my life is better, it is better because of Whitney Strong, because I have a true purpose, a purpose that is something I'm intimately familiar with and would not want anyone to ever go through. And then secondly, because I was reunited with my family and everyone that I love, and I'd be lying if I said every day I just walk around happy and in, you know, a grateful state. That's not true. But I do more than I ever did before have these moments where I'll just take a deep breath and I am thankful for my outcome, whether it's something cute my kids have done or something funny my husband says, or even just the beauty on this earth. So I try my hardest to remember all of that because I got something that a lot of people didn't get, whether it's what happened on September 6th or any other mass shooting or daily gun violence. What happened to me is a miracle.
You were commuting a lot from Louisville to Cincinnati for Fifth Third Bank work, you said. Have you been back to Fountain Square since last year?
I did go back a couple of months ago. I was a little bit nervous about it, so I asked one of my good friends at Fifth Third to go with me. And it was mainly because in my head I thought, you're making this a thing. This is not a thing. Just go do it and get over it. And so I walked with her toward the revolving door, and as I started to get close to it, I just felt uneasy, uncomfortable. I don't know that I'm going to be able to do this. But then out of nowhere, sort of one of those moments, like a God moment, one of my favorite songs played by Whitney Houston, and that may sound really trivial, but it's a song that I dance to with my kids. It's like our song. And I thought, all right, well, that was supposed to happen. You are not supposed to be caught up on this door or this square. You are supposed to remember that in that moment, all you wanted was to get back to your family, and you did. So that was supposed to happen. And almost instantaneously, it was all right. And I stared at the door for a little bit, and I thought about, wow, Al was actually closer to me than I thought he was, and just kind of had a moment. And then it was over, and I moved on.
Wow. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. I've been speaking with Whitney Austin, a survivor of last year's deadly shooting at Fountain Square at the Fifth Third Bank Center. She's joining us on the phone right now. We will get back to you, Whitney, because we definitely want to talk about Whitney Strong and the work that you're doing through the organization that you founded. But we also have with us Dr. Kathleen Chard from the University of Cincinnati Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Neuroscience. And she's also with the Cincinnati VA Medical Center, where she's director of the Trauma and Recovery Center. We're also joined by Kristen Weavers, who is UC Health Senior Vice President and Chief Marketing and Communications Officer. She's the chair of the Cincinnati Strong Victims Fund that was established in the wake of last year's deadly shooting. Kathleen, I want to talk about the general experience afterwards for people who survive or witness something like what happened on Fountain Square that day as they begin to cope with it.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people think you just walk away and you're either miserable and horrible and you don't get over it, or you're absolutely fine the next day. And what I really want people to understand is it takes time. You know, recovering from any kind of trauma, whether it be something as horrible as what Whitney went through, or even just a serious car accident where no one was significantly injured, can take time. And it's not a straight change. It can be up and down. You can have one day that's absolutely great, and the next day you're having nightmares again. And I think people say, oh, geez, look how horrible I'm doing. I'm not doing something right. And that's why we actually ask people to give themselves a couple of months after any kind of trauma to just be gentle, be kind to yourself, take time for yourself, and understand that these thoughts are going to keep coming back. And then if you're not feeling better after several months, then maybe it's time to actually talk to a medical professional about, is there a disorder that's developed that we can help with?
Are there general best practices for people who struggle to understand or to overcome the way they feel after such an event as it relates to their mental health?
Absolutely. And I think Whitney is such a casebook for this, just listening to you on the phone, talking about some of this. I mean, the idea of having a bigger purpose, you know, really having a meaning in your life is really critical. I think so many people feel like meaning is lost. And so they sometimes park themselves in front of the television with no meaning. And whether it's a job, whether it's volunteering, whether it's working out, just having that greater good for yourself, whatever it may be, I think is critically important. But also avoiding judgment. I think a lot of people tend to second guess, and sometimes it's actually facilitated by our friends and loved ones. Why did you do this? Why did you do that? That's very unhelpful, and it's better not to second guess what we did and actually focus on the facts of what really happened, because often there were not choices in these situations, and this is just hindsight bias, looking backwards.
Well, you raise an interesting point. What role do people close to people who have experienced this play in the recovery process? What's the right thing to do when you didn't experience it, but someone close to you has?
Yeah, we know that the people close to you are actually the best medicine for preventing a mental health disorder. So having people around you who are supportive and understanding, who will listen if you want to talk, just be quiet if you want to sit still, but avoiding any blame, shame, or guilt statements, the coulda, shoulda, wouldas. Those are so unhelpful. And yes, we all want to jump to those, right? When the child knocks something off the table, I told you this was going to happen. You should have done X. The coulda, shouldas are what causes the problem later. Lecturing afterwards, it's already happened now. Okay, the time for prevention was already there. We can't do that now. Now we can be supportive. The outcome has happened. What can I do to help you now that it's happened?
PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, is something that we seem most often to associate with members of the military coming back from a war zone. What are the similarities and what are the differences between what soldiers experience compared to what survivors of a mass shooting might feel, if there are any?
I think absolutely. One of the things that we found is that they are similar. Anyone who has post-traumatic stress disorder, whether it be from child abuse, from a car accident, from a shooting, from combat, they're very similar. And the beauty of that is that means our treatments can be similar. We know that we have an effective way to help people. So the symptoms are going to be the same. We're going to be re-experiencing what happened in our thoughts and our dreams. We're going to be avoiding anything that might trigger us. So people, places, and things. We're going to have changes in our thoughts and feelings. You know, what, the world is unsafe. I can't go out. I can't trust other people. I can't feel emotionally close. Right. And then we're also going to be on high alert, you know, constantly awake, constantly overcharged and ready for danger. And regardless of the type of trauma, we find those symptoms are identical throughout our trauma survivors, which makes it possible for us to actually intervene and make them better faster.
Has this changed at all, the way that we deal with these feelings? Has it evolved at all as this country experiences event after event? And of course, people who find themselves swept up in whatever the most recent mass shooting may be are aware of what has happened previously. Is there any finding of evolution in the way people process it or the way that they deal with it?
Well, I think one of the things that we're finding is that people are more aware of the impact, the mental health impact. And I hate to say that, but that is a good outcome if we could find one, is that people being aware that these things do hurt people emotionally. And it's not just about the physical wounds, it's the emotional and mental wounds as well. And so I think that is one of the things we found. But the sad part of this is that people are now more scared. You're finding people who are more fearful about going out, fearful about going places. Children are now going through active shooter drills in schools, which of course none of us went through when we were little. And it's having an impact. Children are coming home scared and they're saying, I'm scared to go to school now, mommy, because of what I learned today about having to hide in the closet. Will the teacher actually protect me? And so I think the impact is becoming more significant as we see more of these happening and more information coming out each day.
Whitney, the way you talked about your experience on that day, it sounded like you were very focused ahead of the event. You were focused on your work. And even after being shot, you maintain this serious level of focus. Of course, this time it was on living, staying alive through the event. We know that you've recovered from being wounded physically, but can you talk a little bit about how you dealt with any mental issues that you might have felt in the aftermath?
Sure, but I just want to add the disclaimer that I think everybody's process in terms of recovery is different. And what I will always say is that I lived. I got everything that I wanted out of that moment. So while it may appear that I am mentally strong in a way that people can't fathom, go back to, I got what I wanted. And so, yes, absolutely. I have a psychiatrist that I see on a regular basis, and she really works wonders for me in assisting with moving forward. And I also learned that when a mass shooting occurs, which is really often what sends me into a tailspin, that I can either pour through all of the details, the events, the victims, or I can turn it off and I can focus on Whitney Strong, because working on Whitney Strong will bring forward solutions that will save lives. Reading about these details will only hurt me. So I learned that trick very early on and have applied it. In fact, one of the most difficult days was coming home in October of last year. It was my second surgery at UC, and it was the exact day that a Kroger The shooting occurred in Kroger in Louisville, Kentucky. And that, I'll never forget that day. It was so, so difficult. And I spent probably 2 days ruminating on all of it. And then I woke up 2 days later and said, that's it. This is not helpful. This is not productive. You are helping no one. And I pulled out my laptop and I started working on Whitney Strong again.
And Whitney Strong is the name of the organization that you funded, where you'll be advocating for sensible, responsible gun ownership. And we will talk about that in just a moment. But first, let's talk to Kristen about the organization that was founded here in Cincinnati in the aftermath of that shooting. Kristen, you're Senior Vice President at UC Health and the Chair of the Cincinnati Strong Victims Fund Steering Committee. What is the status of the fund now?
So the fund has been distributed, and you know, just going back to why did this happen, and unfortunately this is happening more and more across the country, and the National Center for Victims of Crime established the National Compassion Fund, and there are individuals there who, when something like this happens in a community or city, they reach out to city officials and leaders to say, we're here to help you, because often what happens is that the outpouring of compassion or just the desire to want to do something causes people to say, how can I help? And in many ways, people say, I'd like to contribute to help those who were affected by a tragedy. And so individuals helped reach out to Fifth Third, and Fifth Third, out of their incredible commitment to all those that were affected, employees, people like Whitney, those in the community that could see and observe in and around Fountain Square, and obviously all of us on the fringes of this, because we know people who work downtown, were immediately calling. They made a large contribution to begin this fund, assembled a group of 11 other community leaders to come together. I was humbled to be asked by Heidi Jark and Teresa Tanner, formerly at Fifth Third, to chair this committee. We worked through a four-month-long process. Dr. Chard, as a PSTD nationally renowned expert at UC Health, also participated in this committee. We came together. We created a protocol. We accepted donations and then worked through the end of that year, last year, through December to come together. And then we distributed the funds based on the protocol. All have been distributed. Important to note that we felt strongly about ensuring that we looked at people who experienced emotional trauma and distress. Obviously, families, physically injured people, those who had to get outpatient care, et cetera. And all of those funds have been distributed, but it was at their discretion to learn to determine how they wanted to leverage those funds for their own well-being.
Well, what can you tell us about that, about how they were leveraged?
I think those were personal choices of individuals, and we didn't expect them to report back to us how they did that. What we do know is that people expressed their gratitude, their appreciation. Some felt guilty accepting the funds, and so we went through conversations to ensure they knew they were absolutely worthy because of what they had experienced. And again, it was their discretion to determine how it would help them best.
And Whitney, you started your own organization, Whitney Strong, advocating for responsible gun ownership. Can you tell us what that means to you, responsible gun ownership?
Sure. So in that first week that we spent in the University of Cincinnati Hospital, I couldn't physically do much, but my mind was very overactive. And a lot of time was spent thinking about how can we make progress on this issue? This is actually an issue that I cared about before I was shot 12 times, and I certainly care now. And it feels like there's very little progress occurring at the federal level and in states like Kentucky and Ohio. So how can we do this differently? And so my husband and I concluded that it must be approached from the center. And what that means to us is it shouldn't be that it is one side of the political aisle only that is focused on solving this problem. We need both sides. And we also want to pull gun owners into the conversation. And so it's not about taking guns away. In fact, Waller and I own guns. My husband, Waller, sorry, we own guns. This is about making sure that if you have a gun, you are responsible with your gun. and then looking to reduce the number of gun deaths year over year, plain and simple.
I think we should note that there have been a number of mass shootings in the United States in just the past couple of years, before Cincinnati, after Cincinnati, some of the larger ones, Las Vegas, October of 17, 58 killed, November of 17, 26 killed in Sutherland, Texas at a church, Parkland, the high school, 17 dead in February of 18, 10 killed at a Santa Fe high school in May of 2018, 11 dead at the Pittsburgh synagogue in October of 2018, Sherman Oaks, California nightclub, 12 dead, November of 2018. Late May of this year, 12 dead at the City Building in Virginia Beach. And of course, the bloody weekend just this past August, starting with 22 killed at an El Paso Walmart. And then the next day, 9 killed in downtown Dayton. And this list just seems to grow constantly. And I'm wondering, Whitney, how do you keep heart that the country even wants to have an appropriate conversation about reform as it relates to guns, or that politicians will act?
So certainly I think that there are signs that are heartening that continue to keep all of us engaged, one of them being four extreme risk protection orders, a bill that we're championing in both Kentucky and Ohio. That bill, or some version of it, it's called the Safety Protection Order that Governor DeWine is championing as part of his 17-point plan. So that's a win right there in the first place, that there's a 17-point plan. In the state of Kentucky, we have three different co-sponsors, and it is a bipartisan coalition moving forward with that legislation for Kentucky. So there are small signs of success everywhere. And then furthermore, we as victims are the best advocates that ever advocates and activists that ever existed. We will never forget what happened to us, and whether it's the work through Whitney Strong or many of the other great organizations that exist to fight to end gun violence, we aren't going to stop. We cannot forget what happened to us.
On Friday night in Louisville at the Muhammad Ali Center, Whitney Strong, A Night for Life takes place, 1 year exactly after the deadly shooting here in Cincinnati. Tell us about the event.
Yes, I am overwhelmed with gratitude. We sold out with the event more than a month in advance. It is a great opportunity for really Louisvillean Cincinnatians. We have plenty of people from Cincinnati coming down to hear the message and the focus of Whitney Strong and to empower them to take action so that we can make a difference in a unified way. We wanted to do this on the one-year anniversary because it is obviously a very special day to me. And it also was important to make sure that we continue to move the organization forward. What people may not realize, and I hope I fooled them, is that we don't have any employees. This is all the work of me out of my home and 14 board members. So we have a lot of work to do. And in order to make it sustainable, we need donations from those that care about moving this cause forward.
And Kathleen, lastly, as we start to wrap up, for people who are struggling or coming to terms with their mental feelings or stability in regards to PTSD, what's the first step they should take?
Absolutely. If they feel like they can't cope on their own or with their loved ones, they should absolutely reach out for help. And I think the big thing to know is that psychotherapy works. Where some people want to take medication and can take medication, we know that the best treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder and related issues is therapy and being able to talk to someone. And it is not a lifetime. It's literally something between 7 and 15 sessions can be inordinately helpful at treating the symptoms that come along with this type of trauma.
And Kristen, what is the legacy of the Cincinnati Strong Victims Fund? What does it tell you about our community and the way it responded to what happened a year ago?
It's about resilience and bravery and doing what's right and caring about each other. And that is why Whitney is a hero for all of us and showing us the way. So Whitney, congratulations on sharing your story. We're so proud of you. And again, so honored to have helped take care of you on this journey back to what is going to be a phenomenal inspiration for all of us. Thanks a lot for doing this.
Thank you.
Whitney Austin survived the Fifth Third Bank shooting at Fountain Square in downtown Cincinnati a year ago, even after being shot 12 times, and is now pushing forward with responsible gun ownership initiatives through the organization Whitney Strong. Whitney's been on the phone with us. Whitney, thanks so much for taking some time and to share this story with us.
Thank you for having me.
I also want to thank Dr. Kathleen Chard from UC and the VA Medical Center, and also Kristen Weavers from UC Health and the Cincinnati Strong Victims Fund. Thanks to both of you for being here as well.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.